give a little bit, oh, give a little bit of your love to me.
Hello, I'm Richard Aidy. This is The Money. Today, we're all about charities, so giving to help others. It's at the heart of Australian life. It affects much more than you might think. But why do we do it? Susan Pascoe has thought about this a lot. She recently concluded her term as the first head of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission.
For many people, there's a charity that has a mission that accords with their own core values. So whether it's humanitarian aid, whether it's the arts and a culture, whether it's welfare within Australia, medical research, whatever, there are many purposes of charities that align with the passions and convictions of individual Australians. And so they're very happy to give. Of course, for some, the tax benefit is an incentive to give, but the research that's mainly been done overseas shows that for most people, they're giving because they share the conviction of the charity. They're giving because they have a sense of altruism and goodwill. And often, particularly for volunteers, as much as donors, they do get a sense of well-being when they're doing something selfless for the broader community.
So how big is the sector? William McGregor is a senior industry analyst at IBIS World.
It brings in approximately $134.5 billion in income, and that was based on 2015 income figures. Not only that, it's also large in terms of the amount of people and employees, coming in at number two out of all Australian sectors, employing close to 1.2 million people. In terms of income, it accounts for about 8.3% of Australia's GDP in 2015.
I am blown away by that. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, it's very impressive, but it should be noted, I guess, that this isn't all from donations. This also comes from government grants, which account for about 41% of charity income, or charity and not-for-profits income. And donations and bequests account for about 8.3%, or about $11.2 billion.
There's close to 55,000 charities in Australia. Nick Hookway is in the School of Social Sciences at the University of Tasmania.
This makes it pretty big, you know, and it's bigger than electricity, gas, water and the water services sector, which is around $120 billion, and also the agricultural, forestry and fishing sector, which is about $90 billion. So about 80% of adult Australians will financially contribute to charity or non-profit organisation in the 2015 to 2016 period. So that's about 15 million of us. So that's a pretty significant number. I think we can give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back around that figure. Total giving is about 12.5 billion, and this is up nearly 5 billion from 10 years ago. But the percentage of people donating has dropped. So that's an interesting trend that we need to monitor and keep an eye on. In terms of average donations, you're looking at about a bit over $750 over the year, and that's up to over the last 10 years as well.
It's big, pervasive, and most of us are donors. But how does the sector break down? Which bit's the largest?
The religious bodies are. They are just under 30%, and that's consistent with common law countries, and somewhere between 30% and a third, 33% is where you'll find the religious organisations. And then again, typically with the other common law countries, education and research are next, and that's at 19%. And then you've got your social services, which is your welfare services, and that comes in at around 10%. Significantly, I think, in the minds of the community, they see the word charity as meaning benevolent support to individuals, and they would see that social service area probably as the largest, but in fact, it is religion and education ahead of it.
You can consider and classify the sector in other ways too.
So there's two ways that we can break down which are the largest. We can do that by income, and we can do that by a number of charities and not-for-profits in that particular subsector. Based on income, and this is broken down even further, higher education is the largest, and that accounted for $27.9 billion in total income in 2015. Primary and secondary education came in at number two, and that accounted for $22.7 billion in total income. And aged care came in at number three with $12.5 billion in total income.
all have pain, we all have sorrow.
Susan Pascoe finished as the inaugural head of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission a few months ago. It's the sector's regulator and provides a badge of quality.
Absolutely. And there's been over 2 million hits of the register. So we know people are getting online and doing their due diligence before they're giving. And a significant group of the people who are doing that are the grant-making bodies, either the private foundations, public foundations, or the government agencies. So they can get online and assure themselves that they're giving to a bona fide agency that's met its obligations, that, in other words, is being administered effectively, and they can give to it with confidence. So that's been, I think, a real fillip for the sector.
For donors to see you on the website, you need to meet certain requirements.
To be registered as a charity, you must be not-for-profit, you must have a charitable purpose, and there's a number of criminal matters that you must not be involved in. To remain as a charity, you must submit that annual information statement and you must meet 5 governance standards. And that's another means of assuring the community that you're operating in a very professional manner.
For 50 years, World Vision has worked alongside people who are changing the world. People who believe every life deserves the best possible start, who give communities the tools and knowledge they need to thrive.
World Vision Australia is one of the best-known charities in the country. Chief Executive Claire Rogers wants you to know it better.
Transparency is at the heart, I think, of the donor relationship. So when a donor makes a contribution and invests, usually with their heart, then invests funds to support a purpose or a cause, there's a social contract that happens in that moment. And I think historically, charities have tended to rely upon brand, like many large corporations in any industry, tended to rely on brand and not actually being there in that relationship between the donor and the gift that they're making.
So Claire, what's your budget?
We have revenue of approximately $400 million Australian dollars per year. 81% goes to field programs and advocacy work to benefit children and their communities. 10% is to fundraising, which allows our work to continue. And 9% is in administration and investment in how we do what we do better. Because like any organisation, like any industry, we need to continually improve.
To achieve all this, you need a reliable income stream.
We have 3 core income streams. One is child sponsorship, and now we've added community sponsorship as well. And then we have a private and high net worth corporate segment where we have relationships with organisations and individuals to do specific tasks in field strategies and impact, and then institutional donors. So we are a diversified funding stream. There's different things happening in each of those streams. And while there are economic changes going on in each of those streams, the other thing that's really important is the commitment at a public and national level towards aid and to continuing aid. And probably our biggest challenge at the moment is the public and government support. In fact, it's actually quite different. The public support is still very high. Australians are the 3rd most generous nations at an individual personal giving level. But at a government level, we are very low, 17th in the world, and continuing to go down the rankings in terms of commitment to the resolution of global poverty.
Before she came to World Vision, Claire Rogers worked in banking, so she's very aware that charities don't have all the options available to the corporate sector when it comes to accessing capital.
There's probably 3 ways to raise funds, and most organisations, the traditional model has been a charity raise in the charity dollar segment, if you like. But I think there's 2 other interesting segments that are emerging. The first is how can you put a cause in the flow of consumers' spend? And so we're seeing a rise of social enterprises coming into the market. You can buy, ethical coffee. You can buy you know, a whole raft of things now, ethical toilet paper and profits from that going back out to the field. So that's a very interesting space that allows consumers who might not have a lot of discretionary funds to give to a charity to still contribute to transforming poverty outcomes. And the third area is this area of capital. And I think there's increasing interest, and we're certainly looking at this because we have a significant global footprint for our fieldwork, but there's increasing interest in turning or packaging, if you like, fieldwork into investable assets. And there are some examples of this already in the market with some of the environmental organisations. And we certainly have programming in the field that does generate an income.
What sort of businesses are we talking about? Shops? Factories? What?
Well, one of our star examples is a woman in Bangladesh who had a brush and mat business. And as a result of helping her grow her operation and providing extra seed capital for her to expand, she was able to win a contract with Bunnings in Australia. And so her mats and brushes are sold in Australia. So that's a real example of how we can, the symbiotic relationship between aid as seed funding, but then stepping up into an economic context that's not dissimilar to what we see in Australia. But because it's in a poverty context, she employs 30 people and they are then able to do, as I said, send their kids to school. And it just really opens up possibilities and opportunities in that community that weren't there before.
This is The Money on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Adie. Today we're looking at charities. And it's time to meet someone with a very different perspective. Caroline Fiennes runs Giving Evidence, which advises donors on how to give effectively. She says, unfortunately, giving to a charity can be a complete waste of money.
That is because some programs which charities run are not effective. So they don't do a good job of solving the problem that they are intending to solve. And there are some cases of where programs actually make a problem worse. That issue is not unique to charities, actually. It's true of social and environmental programs in general. So it's true also of programs that governments run, for example, that some of them make a problem better, some of them have no effect on it at all, and some of them make a problem worse. But that's why when we're giving to charities, we need to be judicious to understand the problem that they are trying to solve and really understand that the effect that they actually have on those problems.
This is evidence-based giving. But how's an ordinary person to do it?
Well, there's two stages. The first is that the nonprofit itself has to find the evidence to understand the problem that it's trying to solve and the evidence about whether the kind of program that it's thinking about is effective. And that usually involves that nonprofit looking at the academic and rigorous evidence in the domain in which it's working, so in domestic violence or getting people back to work or mental health or whatever. And then the second stage is, as you say, if you are a regular donor, a normal donor, giving your $100, $200, $300 a year, how are you supposed to know? And the honest answer is that it can be quite difficult because often all you have is the charity's word about the effectiveness that they are having. And I used to run a nonprofit. And obviously, when you talk to donors, then you are doing marketing and fundraising. So their word is not really independent.
One of the other points she makes is that the largest charities have mostly been around a long time.
There's a really interesting report about the nonprofit sector in Australia and a similar one in New Zealand, which has a table of the top, I think, 10 or 20 charities by income in both countries currently and 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 20 years ago. And I forget the numbers, but I think it's something like 3/4 of them are basically the same over a 20-year period. There's very little churn. Whereas if you look at the analogous list of companies, you know, the top 10 or 20 companies by market capitalization or by revenue over the same period. There's an enormous amount of churn. And the reason for that is basically that the way that charities raise money is people give to charities that they've heard of. And they think that if they've heard of them and they're familiar with them, that's a kind of reassuring sign. So in a funny way, charities end up competing not actually on being good at solving the problem that they're trying to solve, but they sort of compete on being old, actually. Old and well-known and famous and familiar.
This has real implications because the cost of fundraising, what charities have to spend to raise money, is going up.
There has been an enormous rise in the number of nonprofits, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But the amount of money that is given as a proportion of GDP is basically stable. So there's essentially a fixed pie and more organizations fighting for it. So the cost of fundraising has gone up. And as you say, the way that the dynamics seem to work favor the big established organizations.
Yeah.
And that is fine if the big established organizations are doing an amazing job. They're the ones that are doing the best work. Although I don't know of any evidence that the best work is being done by the big organizations.
Which leaves us back where we were a few minutes ago. How can an ordinary person who wants to give effectively get enough information? Well, there are independent rating agencies that assess charities in international development, like GiveWell or The Life You Can Save.
The other thing that you can do if you are like a normal person, a normal individual, is to look at the funding by the big foundations who do have professional staff, and you can copy what they do. So I call this copying somebody else's homework or investing like Warren Buffett. So if there is a really sensible foundation and they are funding Charity X, then the chances are that they have done their homework and Charity X is all right. And if you give money to Charity X, then you'll probably be fine.
On The Money today, we're looking at the economics of charities. Up to now, it's been about donations, so cash, the credit card, direct debits, money. And that's most of it, but it's not all of it. There's donations in kind, actual services, actual goods. Alison Covington runs Good 360 Australia. Here's how it works.
Businesses in Australia have excess inventory, so they're end of season goods. So it can be anything from clothing, toys, beauty products. And we connect those goods to Australians who need them most through our online marketplace. So anything that's not food. So, you know, we're always talking about food waste, but we like businesses to think about, you know, what do they have that's not food, and how we can connect them to people who need them most.
This is excess stock. It hasn't sold, and if it isn't moved, it's going to landfill. But how does Good 360 match donor and charity?
So we have an online marketplace, so we consider ourselves the eBay for charities. We vet these charities to make sure that they are a proper, legitimate charity here in Australia. There's an organisation called the ACNC, so they've got a register of over 50,000 charities pre-vetted. We match them up to that organisation, and then they, once they've been vetted by Good 360, they're eligible to have access to the goods.
It's easy to see the advantages for a charity. What's in it for the businesses?
It's fantastic for them because we've solved their problem. You know, we've just had a fantastic relationship with Big W. They've very generously donated over 400,000 items for Christmas because for them, they want to help Australian families. And how do they distribute that many items to Australian families all around Australia? And through us, they get to do that. And already, you know, we're working with over 200 charities within a month to distribute those goods for Christmas. And for them to broker that relationship with 200 charities, they don't know the names and the contact details of 200 charities to distribute that many goods.
So it's a win, win, win. But for the business, you can see there's two wins. They get to look good.
Yep.
And they get to move stock that they can't sell.
Yeah, but it's that engagement that their employees are getting because they feel so fantastic that these goods are being placed where their employees work and live. they're finding that it's that community connect. So they feel so fantastic about those relationships with those charities where they are connected to in their local stores.
Win, win, win for the businesses. But how does Good360 find the money to keep itself operating?
We need donations from our corporate partners or philanthropists to grow. So, you know, we've been restrained from growing faster by not being able to seek enough capital to grow, enough donations. And that's a challenge like every charity. You know, we're trying to grow as fast as we can get the cash to do that. So it's new and, you know, people have to have a look at us and go, you know, is that interesting? But what we have been able to achieve in our first year is for every dollar of donations we've received, we've been able to put $10 of product into the hands of Australians who need it. And I think that's a very good leverage effect of a donation. So we've just got to get more people to know that that's a really good value for your donation. And we're running a Christmas campaign now where we're about giving away $5 million worth of goods at Christmas time. And we're asking people to help donate to that campaign. And that helps us grow and donate more goods to Aussies in need.
Because all the goods are donated, Alison uses the money that comes in for administration.
There's always talk in the media that people don't like charity spending money on administration costs. But I think we shouldn't shy away from that because without administration costs, how do charities run? And for us, you know, we have very lean operations and, you know, we don't have any other costs except for administration costs because we're very fortunate that we, our staff who are our administration costs are very nimble at going and raising other pro bono services. So, you know, we've brokered deals with our warehouse company who supply our warehouse and our office at pro bono. So we don't pay any rent cost. So if you look at, you know, our ability to leverage our dollars, so for every dollar we spend on staff costs, we then attract another $2 to $3 in pro bono services. So I would argue that our administration costs is a really good use of a donation dollar because that team go and get other things for free. So it's a very good use of our funding because they're very smart at what they do.
That issue of how charities spend what they receive casts a long shadow. Nick Hookway from the University of Tasmania.
Well, this is one of the barriers that are in place for people in terms of giving their money and donating is that they're not sure about where the money is going. I mean, I always remember my mother saying that growing up, you know, I would give more money if I knew that it was going to where I intended it to go. And I guess this is related to the growth of movements such as the effective altruism movement, which has been led in Australia by Peter Singer, which is trying to give clearer measures around impact and effectiveness of our charitable donations so we know which organisations are having the biggest impact and effect. So I think those movements are really, really interesting. And I know that that's something I've been personally looking at myself and something that I'd like to do some further research on, whether this will encourage people to donate more regularly and perhaps to give more money as well.
Another change Nick highlights is the impact of social media.
The obvious one is crowdfunding has really gained traction. People mobilising their networks to give directly to individuals and to causes. And there's things like, you know, collective giving, giving circles. So people pooling their resources to make donations. So in Sydney, one that's been gaining quite a lot of traction is Impact 100, which involves each year 100 donations of $1,000 being combined to make 100 grand. And then that money is granted to an organisation that can have a real and measurable impact in terms of improving the life outcomes of people living in Sydney.
What about the more confronting fundraising strategies, like cold calling and chuggers?
Well, most of us don't like the chuggers, and most of us don't like cold callers. But the evidence shows that they're one of the most effective ways to get people to donate their hard-earned. There's something particularly being approached on the street by the chuggers. They show pretty good rates in terms of getting people to donate their money. Though there is some evidence that charities are outsourcing a lot of the hard work to these types of people who are, you know, the work is precarious and insecure and low paying, and the emotional labour of being out in the street and being abused by strangers or ignored most of the time by strangers is not easy work.
Claire Rogers from World Vision Australia.
I have a strong view on this, and it comes from having spent many years managing customer relationships in a banking context, that your customers will only stay with you if you capture their heart. And so for us, we're not involved in that form of fundraising. I'm encouraging and working with my team around building a relationship with our donors that helps them meet their heart need to contribute and the willingness to continue then a long-term relationship with us as an organisation. That's not easy, and I know that's not easy for all in the industry who might have different business models, but we left that model 2 to 3 years ago because we didn't feel it provided that long-term commitment and revenue stream.
And that decision might well hint at the future of fundraising within the sector. Here's Susan Pascoe, our first commissioner at the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission.
There may be greater opportunity for online giving, and I really hope there is, because one of the activities that brought the sector into a bit of disrepute this year, well, not the sector so much, but there were very serious allegations aired about the conduct of some of the commercial fundraising arms. But of course, the charities have engaged those, and they've engaged them because they don't have expertise or capability in-house to raise funds, and they need the funds to continue their work. And some very large and very well-known charities use commercial fundraisers. So I think that that's an issue. If it could be addressed by greater online giving so that you get to mass giving rather than face-to-face giving, I think that that would be a real improvement.
How else do you see it changing?
I do think that there's a deep vein of goodness, really, within humans and within the Australian community. And people will continue to want to volunteer and to donate to charities. And so I don't see that changing in the long run. What we might see, though, is a similar movement to the United States, where as the baby boomers are passing their wealth on to the next generation, and there's some quite wealthy ones amongst them, we might get more large foundations and bequests made available. And that, again, might change the landscape where you've got significant philanthropic activity that's available to, you know, support charitable endeavour. I think that we're likely to see that grow.
Susan Pascoe is the former head of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission. My thanks to her. Thanks also to the Chief Executive of World Vision Australia, Claire Rogers, Dr. Nick Hookway from the University of Tasmania, the founder of Good 360 Australia, Alison Covington, Caroline Fines of Giving Evidence, and William McGregor from IBIS World. You'll find more information on our homepage at abc.net.au/rn. The Money's produced by Kate Piercy. Our sound engineer is Isabella Tropiano. I'm Richard Adie.